It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 4.7.
Filming for the Harry Potter remake starts next year because we have to jump on this Harry Potter fever before it's gone.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And Jen has got a Slurpee.
I do. Would you like to hear it?
No, I will kill you. I will kill you! Arrgh! Curse you, Jen, and your evilness!
Okay. And that's what this episode is about.
Slurpees.
Me being
and
evil and Slurpees.
Go to hell. Go to hell.
It's not really. What are we talking about today,
well,
Duke?
Today is our news-oriented episode, and we're no longer doing a lot of movie-based news because we do enough movie and TV stuff on the blog. So most of it today... Shut up. Most of it today is going to be literature-based.
Except for the part that's about movies.
Yeah, but that's about genre. That it happens to be about a movie, but that we're going to talk about genre, so it works out.
That's right. So what's up first?
Well, the first thing is actually some fairly good news. You may know that Adam, our very irregular, like, guest, I guess is now what he is. He's not really a host. He had a story published called Walls of Paper, Softest Skin in Beneath Ceaseless Skies, his first pro, well, second pro scale. His first official pro sale since AE is not a pro market yet. And it was recommended or received a recommended rating from Lois Tilton in Locus, which is pretty much a big deal in terms of short fiction, because Locus magazine is, you know, important. So that's it.
So congratulations, Adam. We're very proud of you. And we're going to take credit for everything.
Yep. And of course, his and it also mentioned on his blog that one of his other Ars Lacuna stories, which is where Walls of Paper is set in this world he set up, called Pulped and Bound Monsters, will be in Flurb number 12, edited by Rudy Rucker, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'm really sad that no pro market picked up the novella he wrote, which is based in the same universe and really is what started everything.
Because, well, I want to read it because I have some questions about his world.
It's 99 cents on Smashwords.
Oh, that's right.
Go get it. I'm serious. It's really good. It's amazing.
I will.
So anyway.
Even though I'm cheap.
That's the cool news from Adam, and we thought we'll put up links so you all can go buy his stories and fun stuff. The other thing, of course, is... which is from Gizmodo. We're going to take the title straight from them because I feel like plagiarizing. It's not plagiarizing because I said it came from them, right?
No, it's not plagiarizing. You're totally attributing.
Okay. Well, the title is Scientists Ruin Science Fiction by Proving Time Travel Is Impossible. And it really should come with, in parentheses, again.
Again. Totally. Okay. I mean, I swear we hear this at least once a year.
Yep. So the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology has demonstrated that a single photon cannot be accelerated beyond the speed of light, which basically means time travel is impossible. So
time travel light, and other things.
And faster than light travel. Yeah,
exactly.
All impossible.
However, Eureka tells me that faster than light travel is possible, and I trust them on everything.
It's a TV show, Jen.
Yes, but... you have to know that this season is kind of awesome because they're doing it's a whole space mission thing, which is really cool, and you should be watching it.
It's a TV show, Jen.
Yeah, but it's awesome.
I'll remember that as, like, your basis for, well, it's a TV, but it's awesome, so the science is true.
Obviously.
The Bible is awesome, so everything in it is true. I shouldn't say that.
You shouldn't. That was very... insensitive of you. But no, seriously, I happen to be of the opinion that even if faster than light travel isn't possible, it will be again next year when somebody else does another study. So I'm going to trust Eureka because they made it faster than the last drive, and that's all that matters.
You also kind of want to live in a fantasy world where we might actually go to other stars.
Exactly. And in Eureka, they're going to Titan, and that's awesome.
Well, that's good. So I'm not sure what this is going to do for science fiction.
Well, exactly. I mean, here's the thing. Science fiction is still going to use totally bunk science because most of the people, okay, not most, but a lot of the people writing science fiction don't actually have degrees in science. Some of them do, and they write hard science fiction, and we give them mad props for being able to actually explain time travel and other scientific things with accuracy. But the rest of us just kind of write whatever and hope that it's true because it makes for a good and interesting story.
True. And, of course, a lot of science fiction just uses things like faster than light travel because
it's convenient.
It's convenient, right?
Exactly.
For the kind of story they're trying to tell, which is, you know, stuff like galactic empires and things like that. With the exception of something like Haldeman, which supposes that near light travel is possible, but, of course, takes the time dilation very seriously.
Again, that would be more hard science fiction.
Right. But it's still not true.
Well, who cares?
The amount of mass needed to move something that fast is...
Okay. Yeah. Now we're just degenerating into science, which neither you nor I actually know that much about.
I know a little bit.
A little bit?
I know 2 + 2 = 5.
But I bet you don't know as much as the physicists at Hong Kong University. Just saying.
What do they know? They're at Hong Kong.
I know. And like I said, I mean, next week somebody else will be like, it's bunk! It's totally possible! And we'll be back to where we started. And again, as the guy who wrote the article that we read points out, this is only one type of time travel that isn't theoretically possible. There are other types that could still work.
But like underpants time travel?
Exactly. Oh. No, he mentions wormholes.
Well, I can do underpants time travel. I'm wearing some. That might be our cue to move on.
Well, no, actually, I just have to mention that underpants time travel just makes me think of Superman's version of time travel, which is, you know, reversing
the Earth's rotation by flying around it really fast.
Exactly.
Which makes no sense.
That is underpants time travel.
Ridiculous. Nothing about Superman makes sense, which is why I don't like him.
Yeah, whatever. I love him. He's awesome. Next!
Okay, so this is something we just discovered right before we were working on this, which is possibly the dumbest thing ever.
Well, no, there's a lot dumber things. I mean, our previous example of, you know, Superman flying around the Earth backwards, that would be dumber than this. However, it's right up there.
So, it's from Dave McGinn, and my understanding is he may have just been the one that put it on there and might not have been the one that wrote it. At least that's what the comments are suggesting. But it's a review of the movie Another Earth, which we mentioned earlier in our previous monthly movie madness feature. And he apparently doesn't think it's science fiction, and his rationale being we're not actually quite sure what the hell he means. Because he says that it appears to be science fiction, but it's not. And then he goes on to talk about how it's got metaphors and drama. And I guess Jen and I were confused because it's like, but science fiction uses metaphors and drama.
Yes. In fact, science fiction does pretty much everything that he talks about in the article. However, yeah, and it does more. I mean, okay, we'll just ignore the fact. Let's just go with maybe science fiction doesn't deal with metaphors and drama, which is obviously patently untrue, but let's ignore that. And let's go with there's another freaking Earth in the sky. And concepts like synchronicity, direct quote, you know, that is in the dialogue. And the potential to fly to this other planet is also a concept that is within the film, I think.
Yep. All very science fictional.
all very science fictional. And okay, to be honest, neither you nor I, right? So we have not watched this film. We have only seen the trailers.
Mm-hmm. And read his post.
And read his post. For all we know, the other Earth really is completely a figment of the main character's imagination, and the whole thing is a giant metaphor. But even if you take that away, it's still a science fiction. Because I'm pretty sure many science fiction novels use things like that, like, you know, metaphors, obviously, as you and I have said, and psychosis, and
like
exactly.
Everything written by Philip K. Dick.
Right. So, really,
who most people would assume is just science fiction by default.
Exactly. So, what I mean, you put a comment on the post, and what was your comment?
I just pointed out that at no point in his whole entire review of this movie, in which he's arguing that it's not science fiction, does he say anything that is support for his assertion that it's not science fiction. Everything he points out are things that science fiction does all the time. Maybe not altogether. It's not frequently done altogether. But you know what? Most movies don't do all the stuff he's saying altogether at the same time. So this doesn't change the fact that it's science fiction. And even so, it doesn't matter that it is science fiction. It's still a good movie regardless of what genre you place it in. The
right.
Genre doesn't change the value of the movie. There are dramas that suck balls. The Hurt Locker is an awful freaking movie. I hate that movie. It's dumb. But
I like that movie.
Okay, well, you have no standards, right?
Obviously.
The Hurt Locker is narratively inconsistent. It's the
whatever.
Give whatever, right? It's just all of these issues with that movie. It's just as possible that a non-genre movie could be bad as a science fiction movie. It just so happens that science fiction is still associated for some dumb reason with all the old, like, 50s ridiculous, like, space monsters and giant squid-like movies. Which is ridiculous, because that's not what a lot of science fiction is anymore.
Right, exactly. I mean, I brought up the point of Never Let Me Go is a very speculative... I mean... When you told me that this guy was saying that it wasn't science fiction, my first question was, well, what is he calling it then? And the one thing that I could think of that he might be calling it was magical realism. And, you know, people are kind of going with that. There's a comment in it saying that this is soft science fiction because it is speculative in nature. And I'm going, okay, well, that to me doesn't denote soft science fiction as opposed to hard, personally. But whether or not the things that are going on are real doesn't necessarily eliminate the science fictional possibilities of it or reality of it. I mean, some of Jason Sanford's work almost seems non-science fictional, and yet it very much is.
Sure.
Never Let Me Go, obviously. The elements of science fiction are so, it's almost scarce. And yet, it's completely a science fiction novel. I haven't... You mentioned Cold Souls, which I haven't actually watched yet. Although I really need to. But then you can go with things like Being John Malkovich, or the other film by that same guy about eternal spotless mind thing.
Right, right.
You know, films that use the metaphorical nature of things to explore reality, and that doesn't make them not science fiction. And all I can think is that this guy just has never watched or read
or the twist ending he mentions at the end, which he never tells us what it is,
right.
Makes it
Thank
so
you.
It's not science fiction. But since we don't know, are we just assume that the twist ending makes it not science fiction, that it's all like she's just like, because I can understand making the argument that it's not science fiction if this whole time it's a psychotic woman's vision of reality as her way to deal with what she did, which is she killed some people in a car accident, right?
Right.
I could understand making the argument it's not science fiction, and I think that's an argument you could make, but that's not the argument he ever makes.
No, obviously because he's trying not to give up the ending. I would suspect that is what the ending is, based on... The hints, you know, the fact that the only mention of the other Earth is a crazy man in a tinfoil hat raving about the other planet. Anyway, I could see it. I could definitely see that happening. But again, I don't think that necessarily makes it not science fiction.
I mean, it's an argument you could have, but it seems like a silly argument to have, because the fact that whether or not it is or is not science fiction is completely irrelevant to whether or not it's a good movie.
Well, yeah, but I don't think he's arguing that it's a bad movie. I just think he's arguing that it's not science fiction.
Well, but he's doing that by pointing out what's great about this movie, what's really, really good about the movie, what's deep and thoughtful about the movie, which means that he's making the argument that science fiction doesn't do that by the fact that he's pointing to it as being not science fiction and saying it does all these things. That's where I have an issue. And I don't think you can make that argument. You just really can't make that argument stick. It's a silly argument.
It is a silly argument. It's a pointless argument.
But he's still making it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense, you know. And maybe the twist ending is she's just crazy, and that's fine. But you can't really make an argument by not ever providing. I know you don't want to spoil the ending, but you can't really make this argument if that's your basis for why it's not science fiction without actually divulging that information, because it's not there.
Agreed, because at the very beginning of the article, he points out that part of the reason that it's considered science fiction, okay, well, it's not actually part of the reason, but anyway, all these different groups, the Alfred P. Sloan Feature Film Prize, which is movies that focus on science technology, and it got something else as well.
Right.
But anyway, the buzz about it is that it's science fiction. So by coming back and saying, oh, but it's not, you really need to have that argument based on if it's just a whole metaphor, it's just her being psychotic. You have to be able to explain why you don't think it is, even though these other people think it is.
Right. Otherwise, you're just like talking out of your butt.
Well, lots of people do that.
I know, but this is a review from the Globe and Mail, which is supposed
makes it kind of disappointing in a lot of ways.
It does, but it's also, you know, this is just the same garbage arguments that a certain pretentious man says that we have all the time, whose name I won't mention.
That's probably a good idea.
So, yeah.
Right. But I mean, the fact that he seems to be saying, if he's not going with the argument that psychotic, therefore not a science fiction, he is going with the argument that it's speculative and metaphorical, therefore not science fiction. And that is patently untrue.
Of course it is.
Science fiction can do a lot. Science fiction is capable of so much. There are very quiet science fictions like Jason Sanford's work, like Never Let Me Go, that, you know, barely seem to be science fictional. But it still has things in it, like the whole magical realism, that the barely science fiction stories, at least by the publishing industry, would say is barely science fiction, but to me are still perfectly capable of being called science fiction and should be called science fiction, because I think you lose something by not calling them science fiction.
Oh, I agree. I mean, it's just coming to this was just a very strange experience. And right before I came to a thing where someone was arguing that Kurt Vonnegut's work wasn't science fiction. And that was also a dumb argument, because it's like obvious that Kurt Vonnegut is a science fiction writer.
Kurt Vonnegut, not science fiction.
Yeah.
How do you even make that argument?
I don't know, but whatever you're doing, stop, because every time you do something, you go robot-y.
I didn't do anything.
You typed something.
I typed something, but that's all I did. I didn't do anything else! Oh my god!
Okay, calm down, lady. Anywho, so why don't we move on from this for a bit, because we kind of, like, mined it for what we were having issues with. And I think maybe if people want to have a discussion, I'd be happy to have the discussion in the comments or something. But what they think about this, about whether they think it's science fiction. Of course, I'd have to see it, I guess. But yeah. So why don't go to the other big news? People pretty much know about this, and I posted it on the blog. But I think we should just mention how excited we are about it, just for a couple minutes. which is that Golance, a UK publisher who'd been doing the SF Masterworks stuff, is releasing something called the SF Gateway, which is basically going to be an electronic imprint that it takes all the backlist of a lot of their authors, particularly people also from the Masterworks series, and puts them out for people to buy in ebook format. And there are going to be something like, there's a crazy amount of titles that they were going to start with up to 3,000.
3,000 by the end of 2012 and 5,000 or more by 2014.
Right. And that's crazy. Yeah. And of course, if you haven't seen it, you should go. But it pretty much includes every significant author imaginable since the dawn of science fiction. In the 1900s, yeah. I mean, it's got everybody from Arthur C. Clarke to Tanith Lee to Doc Smith to Dan Simmons, Robert Silverberg, Mac Reynolds, Paul Anderson. I'm just like randomly jumping around. Gregory Benford, Philip Jose Farmer, Gordon Dixon, Philip K. Dick, Samuel R. Delaney, L. Sprague de Camp, John Crowley, Connie Willis, Kate Wilhelm, Ian Watson, Jack Vance.
All right, that's a lot of names.
Gene Wolfe. Olaf Stapledon, Theodore Sturgeon, William Ten, Sherry S. Tepper.
I think
Tepper,
they get the idea.
James Tipperary Jr., E.C. Tubb.
Are you going to seriously read all 100 names?
Harry Turtle Tubb, Barry Ann Malzberg, C.L. Moore, Frederick Pohl, Tim Powers.
I am personally excited about Pat Kadanick.
Nicola Griffith, Alan D. Foster.
You're still talking. I mean, seriously.
James Bliss, yes,
everybody. Everybody who is anybody is in this list. Just about.
And this is just as of the 20th of July, 2011.
Right.
So they may have more.
This is in autumn, whatever autumn is, September, something like that. They will have the almost 1,000 authors or 100 authors that Duke just read. they're going to have a close to 1,000 titles from these people. I mean,
including Joe Haldeman, Harry Harrison, Frank Herbert.
Exactly, Frank Herbert. I mean, seriously, it's a great... Hey, did you mention Robert E. Howard? Awesome! I mean, this is a great list. A really amazingly fantastic list. And I just hope that they're selling the books at a level that I can afford so that I can read everything that is on this list.
You mean like books by like Terry Carr and Mary Gentle and Hal Clement?
Those people. Exactly.
Aldous Budrus?
Yep.
John Brunner?
Him too. And him?
Keith
there
Roberts?
Needs to be more women. That's all I'm saying.
Well, there does seem that they're going for a lot of the sort of older authors. There weren't a lot of women back then. But they do have a few, like C.L. Moore and James Tiptree Jr. and Sherry S. Tepper. And Connie Willis is a fairly newer author and stuff like that. And hopefully they'll include some more more authors as they go along.
Well, I mean, you got to figure that these are people, what they're putting out is books that are out of print, not books that are in print. So that's the important facet to all this. This is giving people who otherwise probably would not have the opportunity to read any of this the opportunity to do so. I mean, I know my library doesn't have any of these guys. My library kind of sucks,
Communist.
but it doesn't, and I can't find them at bookstores unless I go to used bookstores, and then some of these, you're only going to get them if you're lucky.
Especially, every one of these guys has, like, books that are not as commonly found, and those will probably be released, too. But
exactly.
I really hope that when they do this, where I think they're trying to do the gateway authors, they're saying it's the gateway because it's like, you know, these are the authors people started with, so this is the gateway. Which makes total sense, but I also hope that maybe they expand outward if this is successful and start picking up authors that are maybe, they were really good, but for whatever reason, they weren't well known in their time.
Oh, agreed.
Because that would be really cool to see that stuff re-released, and you could just as a scholar, I'm just thinking that would be amazing, just to find works that you otherwise never would have found.
I wholeheartedly agree. And then their next step would be to include works from authors from other countries.
That maybe aren't, not new stuff, obviously, still older stuff that's maybe
older
not
stuff,
published.
Exactly, that may not have been translated yet. But granted, I realize that there are translation issues and it's a very difficult process.
And it's really costly. And it's very, from a publishing standpoint, translation is extremely costly because they have to justify being able to sell enough books to pay that much.
Right.
That's why a lot of translation is done by universities.
And that's really unfortunate. It makes me very sad because I think it would be fascinating to be able to actually, you know, I'm not a scholar, but I'm a fan, and that's the only way I'm ever going to get access to things that would have been written in, you know, during our golden age of science fiction, where science fiction was being written in other places, we just never got access to it.
Yeah.
I think a great move forward for science fiction in general. And I think it might hurt some sales potentially, but probably not, because these are out of print things. And
yeah, you went robot again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. My computer is just being weird. Anyway,
You're still robot-y, and it's impossible to listen to you when you're robot-y.
Crap.
I know what you're getting at, though. Like, this is gonna be this is a really good thing to do, that we'll be giving access to titles that otherwise people wouldn't have access to, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's all extremely valuable, and hopefully, I know you mentioned this off podcast before we started podcasting, was that we hope that they get the price right, that it's hopefully in a price that's reasonable.
Yes. I think that's probably my biggest concern. I would happily pay $2 to $3 personally. I would probably pay more, but I don't think the market is there for much higher prices than that.
Yeah. Well, I'm probably true for at least some of the authors on this list, but yeah, I mean, I hope that they're intelligent about it, but we'll see.
Yes.
So anywho, so why don't we close out the show? We've gone on for about 25 minutes, so we should really close it out and have people send us messages. So thank you for listening. Here are the ways you can contact us, which are now four ways you can let us know what you think. The first is, of course, Twitter.
Twitter.com/SkiffyInfanti.
Blog. A comment on the blog, obviously.
SkiffyInfanti.wordpress.com.
You can send us an email, which we would love to get.
SkiffyInfanti@gmail.com.
Or you can find us on Google+.
At SkiffyFanti.
Right. And, of course, if you don't have a Google Plus account but you want on there, just send us an email. We can add you.
We will definitely add you. Like our friends, although we're still encountering issues where we don't have management software. Very frustrating.
Well, it's not a big issue for us yet because we're small.
Well, yeah, but it will be. So, world, get on it. Make us the perfect social media management software.
Cool. So, and of course, we would really appreciate iTunes reviews if you've got the time. If you like our show, please let people know. And that's basically it. So,
yep. Next week, we will be back with Philippa Ballantyne.
Bam! All right.
Yeah, I know. Very exciting. I'm
very
looking
exciting.
Forward to it. So, cool. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Caution. You have entered the Podstruction Zone. Please secure all podcatchers. Caution.
How's it coming, guys?
This won't go any faster if you keep interrupting.
Got it. Here's some steampunk, diesel punk, gothic punk.
Goth punk?
Gothic. Trust me on this.
Hey, you're the one who invited him to the show, Sean. I've got epic fantasy, sword and sorcery, and all the news on ebooks.
That's it. Check it out. Clock punk. Ooh, shiny.
I have space opera, time travel, Stargate, and...
Sean, is that He-Man?
Shut up. Boys, I think we did it.
A superior podcast.
Publishing, writing, genre, best-selling authors, and the hot new writers of today.
Editors and agents contest? Did we leave anything out?
AdventuresInSciFiPublishing.com.
Subscribe today. Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. Your podcast for science fiction and fantasy literature since 2006.
Sean?
It's just so beautiful.
Podstruction complete. Enjoy.
Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet. force will be with you. Always.
End of line.